Ron and Anian.
We've got a problem. You're driving around with a bomb in front of your face, and we've got no solution. But it's okay, because it's an older car, and there's probably not a lot of them left. They're smoking something, because in the first place, there's a Volkswagen out there that actually lasted 20 years.
Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
The Car Doctor.
The U.S. government's Highway Safety Agency has approved the company's request to deploy a self-driving vehicle that doesn't meet federal safety standards.
Great!
I'm thinking hopefully one of these self-driving vehicles runs into a Volkswagen with a bad Takata airbag, and that's it. The problem is over.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I'm thinking we should let the people that approve self-driving cars drive in them. I think that would be a great thing. If everybody had to be responsible and, you know, drive in that self-driving car that they've designated as safe for the road and let them deal with it for a while, I think we would see a lot more people pay much more careful attention to things that are going on and being legislated into existence. Hello and welcome. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Glad to have you with me as we motor forward this weekend. I know you've got a lot of choices, and I appreciate you taking the time to spend some time with me and mine and you and yours. And we get along and talk about automobiles and what's going on under the hood. And we'll do that just this hour. I've just been handed something. I want to talk about this real quick before we go over to the phones. Out of Consumer Reports, dated yesterday, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day present for Toyota and Lexus. Toyota and Lexus recall cars to replace engines. Oh boy, happy Valentine's Day. Or as we like to say, keep things short, happy VD. If you've just bought a new Toyota or Lexus, your vehicle may need to have its engine replaced, Consumer Reports is stating. Over 44,000 cars and SUVs from 2019 and 2020 model years are being recalled. And if it's only minor problems, they may overheat, stall, or even catch fire. Affected vehicles include 2020 Camry Hybrid, Toyota Camry Hybrid, Avalon Hybrid, and Lexus ES300H. And 2019, 2020 RAV4s and RAV4 hybrids. The recall is due to an issue with the engine block where combustion takes place. I didn't know that's where combustion takes place. Because of a manufacturing error, the engine block could leak coolant or oil. Small problem. Not really. Which may also lead to a stall or fire while the engine is in use. The driver may first notice warning lights and chimes, increased engine noise, and or smoke. Now, why do they have to state that in the recall? Are they assuming that people are that stupid? Hey, the car's on fire. There's flames under the hood. Well, I guess I'll stop now. Like what? It's maybe that's the next warning that's going to be on the windshield. In the event of smoke under the hood, get out of the car. You can see it because people are expected to be led around like sheep anyway because they can't think for themselves. Who thinks of these things? In a written statement, Toyota announced that about 250 out of the 44,000 cars will actually need their engines replaced, but the dealers will have to check the serial numbers on the engine blocks and recalled vehicles to determine whether they were part of the faulty batch. You got to let that sink in for a minute. So there's 250 bad ones that you can confirm, but we're going to recall 44,000 just to be sure. That's like stunning. You can't even, what do you do with that? So you're going to recall 43,800 cars and tell them it's okay, the recall wasn't necessarily applicable to you. And what'd you just do? You just taught 43,800 people to ignore recalls. I don't understand that. I'm going to work forever. I'm telling you, the problem started in September 2019 at a Toyota-owned factory in Tennessee. The manufacturer's engine blocks for Toyota and Lexus, according to a written statement from the automaker, a water flow meter at the factory failed while some engine blocks were being cast. As a result, these blocks did not cool properly, which causes cracks to develop. Toyota said it discovered the problems when it found vehicles with coolant leaks during inspection of new vehicles at the factory and the dealers. Although the majority of affected vehicles have already been sold, some are still on dealer lots and cannot be sold until they have been repaired. See, and I would be annoyed. I would be upset. There isn't a car here they're talking about that's less than $35,000. And some of them are $50,000, $60,000. And right away, we got to take the engine and replace it. Toyota, too often Yankees overpriced this automobile. Tom, you had a comment.
I just wanted to ask you why you're making such a big deal out of something that, you're acting like this is a problem.
it's not a problem for me. My Chevys and Fords run fine. And the issue here is, you know, here we go again. Everybody says, you know, Toyota and Honda, the two biggest cars on the planet, they never break. What are you kidding? You know what? They're as big a piece of junk as everything else out there on the road. Everything breaks. Remember that. All right? The day comes, I want to see a Toyota dealer or a Honda dealer or any car dealer where it's a showroom and that's it. And there's no parts, there's no service area, and it's not in a remote location or hidden somewhere because the car is that perfect. Trust me. All right? It's everything breaks. But I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Happy VD if you've got a Toyota or a Lexus. You may be under recall, but maybe you'll be lucky. You'll be one of the 44,000 recalled, but you won't be one of the 250 that actually needs it. Trevor in New York City. I got to get to the phones. Yes, sir. 855-560-9900. You're on with the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. How you doing? Trevor from New York.
Good, brother. What's going on?
I have a 04 Honda Accord. And a couple of days ago, I think a cover to the catalytic converter came off from the bottom of the car. I don't know if it's like a protective shield or something.
Okay.
So I was wondering, I took it off. I had someone, they just cut it off and stuff. But I was wondering, is there anything I'm supposed to do? Should I replace that cover or
yes.
In
all seriousness, well, let me ask the qualifying questions. Do you like the car?
Oh, love the car.
Okay.
It only has 64,000 miles on it.
All right. And you have no enemies or family members that you want to get rid of, right? So you wouldn't put them in the car and park it on top of a pile of leaves or anything?
No.
Okay. Then you got to replace the heat shield. Because the issue becomes that heat shield does, it is a bit of a spark arrester and it is a bit of an insulation in case you park on top of a pile of leaves or brush or debris. It may not happen in February, but in July, when it's 110 degrees in the shade and you park on a debris pile or something, it will insulate. Now, you can go down to Honda and just purchase a catalytic converter heat shield kit. It'll be an upper and a lower heat shield. And don't forget to get the bolts that, you know, go with it, because I'm assuming the upper shield is going to fall off or fell off already. And you can replace that without changing the cat. How many miles are on the car? 64, you said?
64,000, yeah.
Yeah, so that cat should be good for another 50 or 60,000 miles. So it's worthwhile just to do the heat shield. But it's worth doing, Trevor. It's probably, it can't be $100. It can't be $100 worth of parts. And even if it is $100, $150, whatever it is, like I said, upper and lower shield, a bolt kit, and at least, you know, you'll be safe in the vehicle. All kidding around aside.
Okay, so you suggest I take it to the dealer to have it repaired, or just go buy the parts from them?
Yeah, you can buy the parts from them. Are you mechanically inclined? Do you have a mechanic you trust? I mean, this isn't rocket science. It's nuts and bolts. It's literally nuts and bolts. Might be a good test for a new mechanic, though. Give him the heat shield, the nuts and bolts, and say, here, put this in the car. And if you show up and he's got it in the trunk or the back seat, you know, he didn't understand the communication process, and, you know, maybe he's not the guy. But, yeah, it's not hard to do at all. There isn't a question of competency level here. This is a C, maybe a B mechanic at best, depending upon creativity.
Okay.
All right, sir?
All right. Thank you, Ron.
You're very welcome, Trevor. Glad to have you with us. 855-560-9900. Let's pull over, take a pause. The Car Doctor will be right back. Don't go away.
Don't call us.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
Let's wander down the New Jersey Turnpike to the great city of Philadelphia and cheesesteaks and talk to Brother Brian. Brian, welcome back to the Car Doctor, sir. How's things today down there?
Thank you, Ron. I had a cheesesteak a couple days ago. So
boy, let me tell you. So another 20 pounds to go, and then I can have a cheesesteak.
You gotta limit it, though. You got maybe one a month. That's the limit.
I don't know if I could do one a month yet. I'm trying to. I've made a deal with myself. There's certain foods I'm going to eat when I hit, because I'm on this diet weightlifting thing, and I'm trying to get in shape. And
Tom and I were talking about it. We got some good ones.
Yeah, but, it's just
anyway. Here's I had a 2012 Nissan Altima. I liked that car quite a bit. Okay. It was actually totaled. I was rear-ended. The car was totaled. I ended up getting, after that, a Ford Fusion, which I kind of like, but they're going to be, according to Ford, they're supposed to be discontinued when they go to the full truck and SUV lineup, with the exception of the Mustang.
Right.
Now, I'd like to get another Altima. A couple people mentioned, I know at this car, you know, for years, has something called the continuous variable transmission.
Yeah, CVT.
And I'm not sure what that is, and it's something I should worry about.
Well, you know, you ever use a drill press?
Yes.
Yeah, so you ever change, like, you know, you take the cover off the top of the drill press, and it's got two pulleys with three grooves and a belt that you move for different speeds and positions?
Yes.
That's kind of like a CVT. That's basically what a CVT is.
Okay.
All right? That was the genius idea. And, you know, they... Listen, I can't say that you can avoid it, because everything, a lot of things today are CVT. The industry seems to embrace it. You know, it's out there. So what's most important is, and I wouldn't avoid it, but I would be aware of it, and I would also be aware what sort of extended warranty could that transmission have on it as a result of it being that vehicle. Now, if it's a Nissan, the typical CVT, depending upon your make and model, and they vary, can have an extended warranty upwards of 120, maybe 130,000 miles in 10 years. And, you know, it's a problem. They know it's a problem. They're doing what they can to keep it interesting and to keep selling their cars. And, you know, it's important, too, from a dollar perspective. The last CVT I heard priced out was Nissan was somewhere around $5,500.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're not cheap. You know, but by the same token, none of them are. We did a Subaru CVT. Was it? Yeah, I think it was a Subaru. I believe it was a CVT. I think the trans was $6,300 about a year and a half ago or so. And, you know, getting that trans was another headache because they just didn't exist. And, you know, there's just something about it. But everybody's got them now. You can't get away from it. It's just part of the industry now.
My father, he's on his fourth Hyundai Sonata. I think they just have the not a CVT, but I think this, you know, whatever they use, the overdrive or the
right.
six-speed overdrive. My mechanic, unfortunately, I lost my mechanic to medical retirement. He had told me about, you know, they're pricey to fix, but he also told me not to push them too hard, especially when they're cold, because it feels like when they're cold that they're revving high. Like if you push it a little too hard when it's cold, it feels like it's not shifting.
Yes, I've experienced, you know, Brian, I've experienced that in certain versions of CVT equipped vehicles. And, you know, my answer still comes back to, it's still a piece of machinery. You know, the way that vehicle, for lack of a better way to put it, abuses itself when it's cold, you know, still comes back to, you still got to do regular oil changes. You still got to do the maintenance. You know, you still got to go through fluids. It's really that important. You
know, I follow maintenance by the book. I've never had a transmission failure in any car. I've always learned you follow the maintenance book.
Right.
You do what it says. And
let me just jump in to that point. That maintenance book is a guide. All right. You know, it's to me, the maintenance book is typically the minimum of what you should be doing.
Right.
But if you're in, you know, certain parts of the world or the country where the environment is harsher, you know, weather wise, temperature wise, you know, sandy road, dusty roads, extreme cold and that type of condition, you know, you're going to do more. I mean, it's just that simple.
If it says oil change 7,500, I'm going to do it more like 5,000, 5,300, 5,400. I'm not going to go all the way to 7,500 for an oil change.
Well, and I think that's smart doing, and I think that, you know, that's you know, you're not going to take anything to the extreme limit, which I think is a huge part of, you know, auto repair.
Well, my longtime mechanic always said, if you don't pay now, you're going to pay later.
Right.
That's what he always told me.
Listen, that was the Fram commercial back in the mid 70s. Pay me now or pay me later. And, you know, they talked about it with their oil filters, and it was the truth. It was a good line then. It's a good line now. It's, you know, it's really that important. And unfortunately, auto repair is a regional phenomenon. All right. You know, this radio show is broadcast around America, and obviously it goes out on the internet around the world. And when I look at the emails and letters that I see from people in the comments, I can see that people by region are dealing with different problems. And a lot of it's based on the year, make, model of car. You know, there's parts of the country that they're still driving 10, 12-year-old cars, full-time, full-scale, older basis. And we had a guy this week with a 2006 Dodge Durango with 170,000 miles on it. It needed a trans. And he just, I'm going to go buy another car. You know, we told him what it was. It was $4,500 to put a trans in the car. And, you know, it's what's next, what could happen next, what if this breaks, what if that breaks. You know, and that's North Jersey, New York City, the tri-state area where, you know, it's a little more affluent. There's a little more money. You know, that vehicle today, that Dodge Durango today is a $50,000 truck. But, you know, somewhere else, other parts of the country where maybe the economy isn't so good or the, you know, it's more blue collar. And I mean nothing derogatory by this. I consider myself a working man, too, but a working class type of neighborhood. You know, it's only $4,500. Let's put a trans in it and get another couple of years out of it.
Well, it's better in multiple car payments. I mean, if you look at it in the long run.
Right.
I'm a person, when I buy a car, I keep the car as long as it's mechanically viable. I don't need a new car. I just keep it going. I keep it going as long as it's viable.
Listen, I'm going through this now with my cell phone. So I went out cell phone shopping. Have you done this lately?
About a year ago. No, actually, yeah, last year.
Yeah, I went out cell phone shopping. So it's no matter how you get away, no matter how you do it, to get a phone comparable that can handle all the software and so on and so forth, if you're going to make the upgrade, it's $800 to begin, to get in the door.
Yes.
And a decent phone, something with a couple of more bells and whistles that you don't need, but, you know, gee whiz, it's only another $150. And then you're going to spend $1,000.
Well, I'm the same way. I keep my phone as long as the phone is viable. I'm just, that's the person I am. You know, keep things, you know, maintain, keep them as long as they're viable.
Right. You know, my kids are on me because they're like, Dad, your phone is 6 going on 7 years old. So what?
My father still uses a flip top, and that's all he wants.
It still works. Listen, I'll tell you what. The best phone I ever had was a flip top Motorola. Oh, 18 years ago, it was brown with multicolored numbers on it. It was green and green, red, and blue screen. It was probably the last phone before we went to smartphones with all the technology that was there. I love that phone. That was the best phone. I gave it to one of my kids.
You could drop that thing out of a three-story window, and it'll still work.
Right. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I gave it to one of my kids. She lost her phone. She needed a phone. She was going out. I said, "Don't lose it." She came back. "Hey, I lost your phone." You know, it's just.
Why do kids lose phones? How many kids lose phones? They all do. I don't understand that. How do you lose a phone?
Well, I think the universe does that because it gives us a reason so that when we're older, we can torture them when they have kids and they give them to us. We can always, you know, load them up with chocolate and send them home because that way it's, you know, remember when you lost my phone? Dad's getting even. So Dad always has to get even. So I appreciate the call, Brian. I hope I helped you and, you know, get yourself a CVT. Unfortunately, just buy the car and make sure the trans has a good warranty on it. We're coming back after this. Don't you go away. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. More information about us, by the way, cardoctorshow.com. Find your podcast there in case you haven't yet and you want to. I'll be back. Don't go away. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, Car Doctor. A little housekeeping, if you will. Last week, and I've been thinking about this all week, somehow I got on a rant about Volkswagen. I can't imagine why. And we actually had a caller, they called in and they said, you know, why does Ron hate Volkswagen? What is it about Volkswagen that he doesn't like? It's not that I hate Volkswagen, but there's an underlying theme of the kid in me wants to say stupidity, but it's probably difficulty. And it's not a very cooperative car company. And what ultimately happens here, I'll tell you a story. So, and it's funny because it happened this week after the rant last week about Volkswagen. A young girl came into the shop this week, yesterday, as a matter of fact, Friday, with a 2010 Volkswagen Beetle. She has a check engine light on and an EVAP fault, and it's a large leak, P0455. And when I started to go through diagnosis, and it was a, she's got limited time, she's an intern, she's trying to get through college, and, you know, first thing I looked at real quick for her in the parking lot, just because she said, you know, it happened right after I got gas. I look, there's a gas cap, but it's not on. And I can't get the gas cap to go on. It's like she's got the wrong cap. And that's not Volkswagen's fault, all right? So I have to believe she was at a busy station, right? And they took the cap off the car, they put it on the pump, and then, you know, another car came in and they put the pump, and then they didn't bother putting the cap on. They just sort of rammed it in there and off she goes and off the other car goes. And I got two cars now with wrong gas caps. So let's get her the right gas cap. We go to look it up. There's a choice of three. I don't understand. And they're not cheap, right? One gas cap's $35. That's the cheapest one of the bunch. One's $52. And the other one was like $63, and it has to be special ordered. So I sent her up to the local parts house, and I said, listen, I'm going to send up this nice young lady, Michelle. Just, you know, you've got two of these in stock. I mean, two out of three, it's got to be, right? No, turns out she needs the third one, all right, which is special order. And, yeah, this is Volkswagen. This is the problem with Volkswagen, all right? It's not that it's a bad car. It's the parts that are attached to it that make it a bad car because everything is difficult. We had to put some cooling system hoses on a Volkswagen, oh, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was. And I called the local dealer and I said, hey, you know, I'm working on a such and such, I believe it was a Beetle. No, it wasn't a Beetle. It was probably a Beetle or a Jetta, whatever, or a Golf, whatever. It doesn't matter. And, you know, some four-cylinder sideways mounted something. And I need a bunch of cooling system hoses and the water neck and the hoses around it. Yeah, well, I'll send you a picture. And I send him a picture. Oh, yeah, I need this one, and this one. Okay. I'm going to send you all the hoses. Send me back what, you know, isn't right. Well, I already told you what I want. I want these three hoses in the neck. Yeah, but it's a possibility of... And I'm not kidding. There was a possibility of 11 hoses out of the three or four that we needed that it could be. And he said, look, I've been a Volkswagen parts man for over 30 years, and I'm telling you right now, there's no way to identify which exact hose you need. We always order all of them. We send out all of them. We get back the extra. We've got like a rotating inventory. How ridiculous of a way is this to run a car company? You know, it makes my job harder. It makes the parts guys harder. Job harder, but you know, Volkswagen just keeps pumping them out because you know it's just a wonderful car. A Volkswagen's a great car till it breaks, and then when it breaks, trying to get replacement parts is a headache. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's not the easiest thing in the world from the manufacturer, and it can be real, you know what, in the aftermarket world. It's just difficult to deal with. So, you know, can I fix it? Sure can. Absolutely, I can fix anything you roll in the door with. It's just a matter of how quick and how economical and what's cost effective about it. So that's part of my pet peeve with Volkswagen. The rest of it's kind of personal. All right, I still think VW stands for virtually worthless. You're never going to get me to change my mind about that. So if you drive one, I'm sorry. You have my sympathy. Another thing I want to bring up is it's cold, right? It's been cold in the Northeast. We haven't seen a lot of snow this winter. I haven't seen a lot of snow reports anywhere in the country. It's like snowfall seemed to be down. And I was thinking about this the other day. We had a couple of cars this week that came in with belt issues. You know, they needed belts. The belts were noisy and people are driving them and they're in for oil changes. Hey, you know, gee, what's that noise we heard when you left the car the night before and where you start? Oh, yeah, it's been making that for a while now. Take a look. Maybe there's something going on. One car actually was in danger of losing the belt. The belt was that shredded. And I think, you know, even though it's no snow, there's still a lot of cold out there. And the cold does beat up on the rubber. The cold does beat up on the belts. And it's also a matter of, you know, the belts are critical. Here's that argument again. Warm up the car in the driveway or just drive it down the road and you get, you know, 7, 8, 10 minutes from the house. And that's when the belt breaks. And then you get to walk back in the cold. Where do you want to warm up the car? I can't talk about that. They're going to shut this radio show down. So from the Car Care Council, carcare.org, you may not see them or know much about them, and this seemed to be a very timely topic. I thought I'd bring it up. But engine belts are always working to keep your vehicle moving. Losing a belt can mean immediate trouble for the engine and a breakdown to you, for you. To avoid being stranded, the Car Care Council recommends that motorists review the owner's manual. And they're the nonprofit Car Care Council, I should point out. These guys are just out there. Their sole existence is to make sure you have a good motoring experience in your automobile. You want to check the owner's manual to ensure the belts are inspected and replaced at the proper intervals. And that's the truth. That's really just, you know, we all think of cars as they run forever, they're perfect, they never need anything. Yeah. If they didn't need anything, there wouldn't be repair shops and parts houses. So a vehicle's belts are essential to cooling, air conditioning, and charging systems of the engine. Serpentine belts are used to turn the water pump, alternator, power steering, and air conditioning compressor. I got to tell you a story about Danny, my mechanic. So, and I love Danny to death. He's been with me 10 going on 11 years, and he's doing a heck of a job. He's like a sponge. He absorbs everything I throw at him, right? Danny bought a 78 Camaro. He found the car of his dreams, this yellow Z28, and he's putting it together at the shop. And, you know, the old man stands over him, and I kind of watch him and, you know, kind of give him a nudge. And, you know, it's sort of fun for me, too. I kind of remember where the old tools are in the shop. Oh, yeah, I think I got the right little clip remover for that and disconnector for that. And so he had to put a set of belts on it. Now, Danny was born in 1990. 1990, yeah, 1990 or 91, I think it was. So he's never seen anything with V-belts, you know, multiple belts. Everything's been a SERP belt to him. So the Camaro's got three belts on it, AC, alternator, and power steering. It took him 10 minutes, and he found it, but it took him 10 minutes to find the bolts for the power steering pump. I never saw anybody so frustrated in my whole life. It was the funniest thing to watch. And I finally said, listen, it's down here in the back. How'd you know that? I said, because I got as aggravated as you the first time I had to do one, and I never forgot it. And that's how you learned, right? We're back to that learning thing, okay? Like I was talking about Sacramento County in a previous show, banning auto repair. You know, it's you know what? Auto repair is good for you. It's good for the soul. It teaches you and it trains you to survive, but it's also good. It gives you a muscle memory, if you will, on where things are. There are some things I'll never forget where they are in automobiles, and belts was one of them, so. Just be aware of that. And this article is out there at carcare.org, by the way, about belts. And, you know, and they point out, I just want to finish up, typical SERP belt replacement is 60 to 90,000 miles. That is true. At 100,000 miles, they're calling for belt replacement on the average car. And typical V-belt replacement is 40 to 50,000 miles. And I think they're being generous there. We typically used to do V-belts in the 30 to 40,000 mile range because the problem with V-belts was there was no automatic tensioner. They had to be tensioned. And I think we've all forgotten that, too. That's another thing we don't do anymore, you know, we used to do on a regular basis. So, and obviously, timing belts, you want to replace that as specified in the owner's manual. Good job, Rich White and the folks out there at carcare.org. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. We're back at 855-560-9900. Have you heard about V2V? V2V communications, this is something, it's been talked about for a long time, but they're considering it. You know, they say the car radio of the future, and it's here now. The article that last month, it's not AM, it's not FM, it's not Sirius, it's not high def or a combination of. It's not a GPS radio or a CB radio. It's something likely to be called CV2X. Essentially shorthand for cellular to vehicle to everything. The new radio will provide two-way communications with other vehicles as well as the cellular network. You won't personally be doing the communicating, but your vehicle radio will. Well, you know, what they're trying to do, all right, and understand, why do we want to go to self-driving cars? What's that all about? We want to go to self-driving cars because we're trying to eliminate accidents. We're trying to eliminate people that drive like jackasses, and they're out there, right? This morning I pulled out. It was a 40-mile-an-hour zone. I pulled out. I had 10 car lanes clearance. I mean, he was 2.5 blocks away, and I pulled out. I'm cruising down Crescent Ave, and I'm doing 40. He got right on my tail, passed me on a double yellow line, gave me the New Jersey salute. I went, okay, brother, it's up to you. You're the one doing all the crazy stuff. And off he went. They're trying to eliminate that kind of driving. That's just what they're looking to do. The whole idea is part of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's goal to improve vehicle safety by having cars and trucks in close proximity communicating with one another. Do you know that they're talking about with self-driving cars. And I'm not saying I'm a proponent of this. I'm just here to report the news, all right? But the idea is that self-driving cars will eliminate traffic lights. You won't need traffic lights anymore. As cars get up to an intersection, they'll know, you know, this one's here, that one's there, and zip, 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 zip. It'll just be, you know, high-speed commuting. You'll eliminate traffic jams. There won't be any rubbernecking anymore with vehicle-to-vehicle communication and self-driving cars because there'll be nothing to look at. You won't be able to slow the car down. The car will just progress along. There'll be no traffic jams. There'll be no traffic. Traffic will become a thing of the past. Those are the claims. That's what they're going for. There was actually a study done last year, and I'm off the article a little bit, but there was actually a study done last year that there's conversation in the body business, in the collision repair industry, that if self-driving cars ever take hold to the level that the government is trying to get them to, you'll see no more collision repair industry. Or it'll be difficult. There'll be less body shops. There won't be, you know, it'll, of course, then they'll have to come up with another reason why our car insurance is so high in New Jersey because, you know, there'll be no, it won't be based on claims and premiums or claims and, you know, adjustments. So, but, you know, V2V radios or transponders, vehicles exchange information automatically about their location, speed, direction, and other data with vehicles within range, typically up to 300 meters. By exchanging data, the vehicles can analyze, determine potential threats. That guy's coming too close. And provide early warnings to the driver. Hey, here's the New Jersey salute. Pull over. Future tie-ins to current advanced driver assist systems and self-driving vehicles are possible. While the main feature of the plan is V2V, these new radios can also communicate with outside entities such as traffic information infrastructure, V2I, that provides updates for traffic, instruction notices, weather warnings, and other relevant trip data. Other links are possible, opening the opportunity for vehicles to communicate with almost anything. That'll be called V2X. The government and industry have been working on this system for decades. Yeah, I kind of remember seeing this at the World's Fair in 1964. I'm dating myself. It developed a radio technology called dedicated short-range communications years ago. The wireless technology is designated as 802.11p and operates in the 5.9 gigahertz spectrum. In 1999, the Federal Communications, the FCC, Tom Ray likes the FCC, dedicated a 75 megahertz block of spectrum to the DSRC. Radios were designed, built, and tested, but nothing else happened. Tom, can you come to the microphone real quick? Have you heard of this? Is this, you know, you're the radio frequency guy. Is this true to...
I was reading something about that the other day. Don't necessarily know if I want my car talking to everybody else around me. And, you know, as far as traffic data... My Garmin GPS does that already. It pulls it off of HD radio data on FM radio stations and what's called RDS data on FM radio stations.
The thing I want to know is, you know, if you've got everybody dependent on one system and that one system goes down, oh, good Lord.
Now what?
Now what? All right. You know, I still can't get the thought out of my head, and this was a couple of years ago. We were talking about self-driving cars, and they're guided by satellites and GPS control. And remember the tidal wave in Japan? It said it shifted the Earth on its axis by 1 degree, which affected how the satellites relayed information.
What about recently with they were doing military maneuvers down around Florida, and I think it was a 150-mile area. GPS didn't work.
Right.
Well, now what?
Right. Now what? Now what do you do? So, you know, it's going to have to be, well, to me, it's no different. Well, yeah, we got to pull over and take a pause. We'll continue this when we come back. 855-560-9900, running into the Car Doctor and Company. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. We were talking about, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, welcome back. We were talking about before the break about vehicle-to-vehicle communication and self-driving cars and the car radio of the future and what it's going to do and how it's going to work. And Tom brought up the point about, you know, certain places he goes where there's no communication and down in Florida.
There's nothing. There's no cellular. Right. There's no nothing. And Mike and I were just talking, what about hacking it?
Well, what about hacking it? What about, you know, what about places you go now that your cell phone has no coverage? All right? Here in North Jersey... You go up Seven Lakes Drive through Harriman State Park, there's no coverage. Are we not going to drive through state parks or federally funded lands anymore?
Since the cellular companies are working on this 5G, ever since they started working on it, the New York State Thruway between, well, up here at the Jersey Line in Albany, the cell coverage is sketchy.
Right.
It's like, this is the New York State Thruway. It's not like there are no cars that drive on this.
You know, they've been working on this for decades, all right? And I think they're going to continue to work on it for decades because I don't think the technology is there. I think it's going to have to come from a satellite in outer space, and it's going to have to be, because I don't see how you're going to get coverage. The amount of towers you would have to put up in terms of making this work, or a powerful enough transmitter device that would get to outer space where the satellite might be. This is stuff of science fiction to a large degree. However, what we can look forward to is the government in its infinite wisdom will continue to try and develop this system and probably try and kill us in the process because it's just not going to work right. So we've got to be ever vigilant and ever watchful and just be aware of our surroundings. And real quick thought, just remember Sacramento County Auto Repair Law. Go Google it, read up on it, and be aware of it. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Till the next time, reminding each and every one of you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.